Good afternoon, everyone. Wow, that's quite loud. Hi, thanks very much for coming along. I hope everyone's had a great start to TechEd. A couple of things I just wanted to cover off before we started. One, Dave and I are tech guys. We're not accomplished public speakers, so please bear with us and prepare to be underwhelmed, I guess. Secondly, can anyone tell me what a gigasecond is?
1 billion seconds,
fantastic. Give that man a prize. So seriously, we have prizes. My lovely assistant down here, Simon. Simon's a Libra and likes Merlot. He'll be handing out the prizes, and we'd really like this to be interactive, so please feel free to yell out questions. To be clear, you probably will have to yell because there's quite a lot of you out there. And lastly, before we get started, I'm going to try really hard not to use the C word. Does anybody know the C word I'm talking about? You're exactly right. So, welcome. This is kind of our rough agenda. Going to talk basically about who we are, who TradeMe are, where we've come from over the last 11 years, a little bit about where we're going, and then Dave's going to drill into our architecture a bit. We're going to talk about monitoring and measuring, a couple of sort of real-world examples of what happens when things go wrong, because they do go wrong, and then we'll talk about some of the sort of weird and wonderful stuff that happens on the site every day. So who are we? That's us. So I'm Matt Van Daventer. I started at TradeMe in 2005, and I'm the head of infrastructure.
Hi. Thanks. Well, that's loud. Thanks for coming along. I'm David Kalouis. I head up the database team. Been at TradeMe now for about 4 and a bit years, and I don't have my box jersey on, but from South Africa, as you might pick up during the talk. And hopefully you guys get something to take away from this, and leave knowing a little bit more about TradeMe than when you arrived.
So this picture is a snapshot of TradeMe from about 5 months ago. So all the people in red are technology. So about a third of the company is tech, and we count technology as everyone from our product team, which is designers, BAs, project managers, through the development and test team, and then through to infrastructure, which is us. So at the moment, the infrastructure team numbers about 11 people. We're looking to grow that team this year, and you'll hear us talk a lot about that in this presentation, because we are hiring, and if you're a smart, awesome person, you should come and work for us. So infrastructure is broadly made up of the database team, network, storage, servers, and corporate support. It'll come, I hope, as no surprise to you guys that we're a Microsoft shop, otherwise we wouldn't be standing here. I have just noticed that Dave has very sneakily put the SQL Server 2008 logo there. We're actually, most of our production systems are still running 2005. I hope that doesn't offend anyone, and we're not going to get dragged off the stage. That's our stack, basically. SQL Server at the back end. Our application is written in .NET. The main site is VB.NET. Most of our ancillary sites are actually written in C#. And everything sits on Windows Server 2008 R2.
And Matt's had a haircut since then.
I have had a haircut since then, yes. So we're not limited to Microsoft technologies, though. We're pretty pragmatic about the tools we use. There are some of the other tools we use up there. Of particular note, Varnish for caching images. Varnish is an open source solution. About 95% of all of the images we serve on the site are served out of cache, so they don't have to go to the back end. The other product that's definitely worth mentioning there, which again is free and open source, is Memcache. So it's a distributed cache, and without Memcache, TradeMe just wouldn't work, is kind of the bottom line. So I hope all of you are familiar with our main site, so our core options business, and our three main verticals, so TradeMe Motors, TradeMe Jobs, and TradeMe Property. We also look after a bunch of other stuff. So Find Someone's our dating site. Had somewhat of a resurgence over the last 12 months, actually. Old Friends was our foray into social networking. Didn't really go that well. holiday houses and travel are kind of our travel property. So holiday houses is you know, renting a batch off somebody. Travel bug is hotels and motels. And then the last one is Treat Me. That's our latest project that we launched in March this year. So that's our entry into the somewhat crowded group buying market. Just out of interest, show of hands for anybody who subscribes to any sort of group buying email, whether it be Grab One, Groupie, reasonable number of people. Keep your hands up if you've actually bought something off one of those sites. Keep your hands up if you've bought something off Treat Me.
Oh, that's pretty good.
It's not too bad. Thanks.
Cool. So a bit of a history lesson. It's a pretty well-known story these days where Trade Me's come from. So I've just got to remember I don't have a clicker. Back in the early days, it started out as a bit of an idea of Sam Morgan's back in 99. And the story goes that you know he was looking around on the internet to buy a heater for his flat. Couldn't find one and got fed up and decided to build something. The more accurate truth is probably that, more along the lines of the fact that he was trying to teach himself some SQL, you know, messing around with SQL 7 and ASP or classic ASP, and ended up building Trade Me, you know, back in the day when it was launched running on a single server somewhere in, I think, his dad's office. And this is pretty much what it looked like. So obviously it spent a lot of time in the design. I'm sure Wellington's top design houses were involved, and there was a budget of millions spent on the logo alone. So, any idea where that's come from? Close.
What was that one? Sorry.
No.
Even more budget than that.
Yeah. No, it's a font. As I said, a budget of millions, and you know, no expense spared. So moving swiftly along.
So just with the benefit of hindsight, I'm really hoping that's an MS Outlook font. I'm hoping that isn't going to raise some horrible retrospective copyright issue that means that Sam's going to lose.
Yeah, should have thought
anyway,
about that.
Anyway, you didn't hear it from us.
So yeah, moving swiftly along. It then changed to look to you know what stuck a look and feel that stuck around for many years. So this is 2001. This stuck around until only a couple of years ago. So this was obviously a major facelift. It's changed a few times over the years. And, you know we're constantly making tweaks and changes to the site. We deploy twice a day. If you wanted to know more about the deploy process and our dev cycles and all that stuff, you should come and see the lovely Simon's presentation, same room and time tomorrow. We then moved on into motors in 2003, property and then jobs. And those kind of rounded out the, you know, originally it was just auctions and then moving more into the classifieds, into the verticals. The property and the motors have really taken off and are now pretty much, you know, within their own right, the top New Zealand websites for those particular businesses, and jobs is growing pretty quickly. It's right up there in the top few job sites in New Zealand. And then you know anyone who came along to the keynote this morning would have heard about the momentous sale to Fairfax. That happened in March 2006. I wasn't around back then, so I think Matt had a few things to say about that.
Yeah, so it was really interesting for me hearing David talk at the keynote this morning, hearing his kind of side of the transaction, I guess. So I hadn't been at Trade Me very long when this happened, and the Sunday night that the deal got done, Sam rang everybody in the company personally to tell them. So I got that phone call on Sunday night, and like everybody else, rocked up to work on the Monday morning, you know, kind of excited but kind of freaking out a little bit as well. And then we saw the press release that got sent around, and you know there was a fair amount of consternation in the office and a little bit of hilarity because they'd clearly was a typo in the press release. There was an extra zero there. It must have been 70 million. It couldn't have been 700. But yeah, it was. And I think history's kind of proven that was not a bad call.
Cool. So moving along, we've, I don't know if you can see, can I actually go back? So that was kind of the original site still from the sort of early 2001 days. And then we, just in the last couple of years, did a major facelift and a bit of a revamp of the whole site. So this is what it looks like today. And yeah, as I said, we're constantly tweaking things, and you know, this screenshot's probably out of date in some way. It's still got underlines on the links, which we don't have anymore. So yeah, things change pretty quickly. Just keeps it interesting. Looking at the number of listings, just to give you an idea of the scale of the growth as we move into the more technical stuff, and I guess as a bit of a backstory to some of the challenges that we face over the years, or you know, my predecessors faced, there's an indication of the first couple of years' growth. So obviously, you know, in the media and various channels, it's kind of touted as a overnight success of Sam Morgan's. You know, this Trade Me thing, it just earned some $700 million overnight. You can see in the early days it kind of took a lot of hard work to get going, and there were obviously a few months there, I'm sure, where it didn't look like it was going anywhere. But eventually got to, you know, pretty reasonable, you know, 3,000 odd listings a day is pretty respectable. And then moving towards today, the previous slide is that little red block there, so it's kind of dwindled away into obscurity. And nowadays we're looking at 250,000 listings a day plus. So anyone care to take a guess at the dips? Yeah, okay, Christmas, New Year. Sorry, you don't all get a prize. Not Oprah. Yeah, so the dips there are the Christmas, New Year period. And what we've started noticing is that, I don't have a laser pointer, but before Christmas and New Year, we've started getting little peaks. And I guess that's just an indication of how people have started using Trade Me as more of a marketplace to purchase new goods and things for, you know, as gifts and stuff just before Christmas. So that's interesting. And yeah, the fact that we're still growing. So obviously it's tapered off somewhat, and you know, we're not running around like headless chickens like I'm sure the tech guys were back in sort of 2003 and 4, trying to keep up with this exponential growth. But yeah, we're still showing some pretty interesting year-on-year growth. And those outliers there will just be, I'm sure I'll get corrected later on, but there's a few free gallery days and things like that where we offer free gallery or free featured listings and that sort of stuff, where we have real massive spikes of listings in one day.
So that kind of brings us up to where we are today. So lots of big numbers there. So at any one time, you know, there's about 1.7 million listings on the site, lots and lots of images, which brings its own challenges, particularly around you know, managing the storage and archival of all of those. You know, there are certain regulatory requirements that mean that we have to be able to go back through time and pull those images out for police inquiries and things like that. Lots of visitors, lots of browsers. 2.5 million emails sent every day is hard work. Most of those are transactional emails, so that's, you know, you've been outbid on this, or your auction's about to close, or those kinds of things. Keeping on the right side of the three major mail providers, so Microsoft, Yahoo, and Google, is almost a full-time job. There aren't too many people who send 2.5 million emails a day legitimately. So we follow a bunch of best practices. We try to have good relationships with all of those guys, but we're pretty small. They're all based offshore. Those three that I just mentioned make up upwards of 80% of our email volume are in those three main providers, and all of that goes offshore now. When Extra signed their deal with Yahoo, you know, all that mail started going to Yahoo servers, so that's all international kind of bandwidth that we have to pay for. It's fun. 70 million pages a day, so our biggest day was in April, 73 million pages. That's our kind of high water mark at the moment. 20,000 HTTP requests a second over peak, and about half of those are images. So on a busy night, there's lots and lots of stuff going on. And from here, we've got a lot of stuff we want to do, and this comes back to having lots of good problems to solve. And again, we're hiring. We're looking for good, smart people, because we've got some really good challenges and some really good things that we want to do, and we've got good buy-in from the business to do. We just don't have the resource to do it at the moment. So our database architecture, which Dave's going to talk about in the next few slides, is a little bit more complicated than it needs to be. We want to consolidate that down. Denali has some really neat stuff for us in terms of full text, which runs all the search on the site, and some of the always-on stuff around mirroring and some of the high availability things. Windows Server Core for obvious reasons. Service Broker we love. So we've been using Service Broker in Anger for about 18 months, right?
Yep.
And it's so awesome. Quick show of hands, because this is supposed to be a database track. People using Service Broker? You always put your hand up. I would encourage anybody with an interest in database stuff to get their hands dirty. It's incredible, so powerful, so many cool things you can use it for. And then, you know, continue to enhance our internal monitoring tools.
Cool. So, yeah, some big numbers. I guess the next question is how we do that. So I'm going to cover off the architecture. It's admittedly a little bit database-centric. I mean, I'm a database guy, and this is a database track. If you need or want more detail around servers and networky stuff, then please feel free to come and bother us afterwards. There's a whole bunch of people down here from TradeMe, and I'm sure there's several people there who'd love to answer some questions. So
they'll have prizes as well.
Yeah. Or beer. My thing's not working. Oh, there we go. Cool, so that should be, so that's a good overview of our TradeMe systems. Starting from the bottom up, if you're a user coming into TradeMe, then that's the sort of layers you'd go through, starting off with the network layer. F5 is, I guess, our primary provider of cool stuff there. Moving up through the web servers, we run out of two data centers in New Zealand, so we've got Wellington and Auckland. And the webs and the next tier of database servers, which I'll talk about in a second, run active-active most of the time. So that's all pretty much IIS 7.5 and other stuff which I don't really understand, Windows Server and stuff.
It's cool stuff though, right? It's
URL rewrite stuff. So moving into the cool stuff, the database stuff, We essentially divide our whole system into two bits. There's the core, which is the kind of yellowy, orangey, I hope, ABCD at the top. That's essentially a cluster, which is, for obvious reasons, is only live in one site at a time. So that's our write-heavy databases. That essentially owns the data that runs TradeMe. The kind of pinkish-colored things below are our browse and search servers. So they're kind of read-only copies of a subset of data from the core site. So they're responsible for probably most of the load on the site. If you're on the site browsing around, looking at antique coins or something, searching, any of that sort of stuff is pretty much hitting these servers. We have very fine-grained control over what's hitting what servers. So we have both in the network layer with the F5 kit, we can control load going to certain IP addresses and all that sort of usual stuff. But we also have another layer underneath that which allows us to, at a very fine level of detail, control, you know, there's 12% search going to that server and there's Motors only going to that, or there's Toyota only going to that search or browse server. So, yeah, we have a nice mix there allowing us to move load around very easily. That pink middle layer is all pretty much commodity hardware. It's all configured exactly the same. You know, they're all blades. We can add and pull servers pretty easily. We can take entire sites down to do index maintenance and all that sort of good stuff. So yeah, it gives us a lot of flexibility. But being able to run active-active just allows us to kind of not have to worry too much about hitting any performance ceilings. And, yeah, just as a bit of a plug, we are actually running Denali CTP3 in production as of a few weeks ago. So hopefully that's still running. I was on call, but Moana's on call. So if a lady runs out the room, then if I start looking worried, then you know why.
Bad stuff's happening.
Yeah. But, no, it's all looking pretty good. We partition the core system. You would have seen it as the ABCD. We have that as a cluster. That's all kind of horizontally partitioned, so very much partitioned by function. So we'll have one server that is the owner of the auctions. We'll have one server that owns all your login credentials and all that sort of stuff, and then one server that owns bids and all that more transactional, write-heavy stuff. That's all running in on solid-state SANs and all that sort of good stuff, nice enterprise-level hardware there. I won't go through all the bullet points, but yeah, just to touch on them, we use full text extensively, so probably in ways that that a lot of people don't expect it to be used. We use the TempDB in a lot of ways, which it's probably not meant to be used. How many, as a matter of interest, how many database people are here? Quite a few. Okay, cool. So we have the full-text catalogs and TempDB on a RAM disk, which is a product from SuperSpeed, and that's for performance reasons. So that allows us to have, you know, super fast I/O access to TempDB, which is our search cache and our full-text catalog. So that's pretty much the TradeMe system. Outside of that, we obviously have a whole bunch of ancillary systems which take care of all the, what I call all the other S's. So we go through the whole database stack. We have SSIS, SSRS, SSAS. You don't want to say that too many times after a few beers. Integration services we use a lot for our external feed providers. So we'll have real estate agents and secondhand car dealers and things like that will provide us with CSVs or XML feeds. And we have to take that, perform ETL, process that, and pull it into the database, create listings, all that sort of good stuff. Reporting services we use a lot internally. Obviously, we don't have any external reports at this stage, but reporting services we use in the tech team a hell of a lot to keep track of all of our monitoring and all the alerting and stuff that we do, which Matt will cover off in a second. And we're definitely moving more into analysis services and cubes and things like that to try and do more in the BI space and improve the value that we get out of the data that we have. Internally, we have a lot of tools as well. So, the dev guys have a bunch of tools that have database backends that we need to look after. We have synchronous mirroring between Auckland and Wellington for a lot of that stuff. We have centralized syslogging databases and configuration databases, all that good stuff. And then the dev and test take up a lot of time and effort maintaining all that stuff just because of the size of the environment and the number of dev and test teams that we have now. So that's not insignificant.
And again, you should come along to Simon's session, same room, same time tomorrow, because he's going to talk a lot about the dev and test stuff. So monitoring and measuring, one of the things that I think we do really well, and we do better than anywhere that I've ever worked for, is monitoring and measuring everything, really. It's incredibly important, especially for us in the early years when we were growing so fast, to just have a really good visibility into what was going on and where we were going to hit our next performance bottleneck and getting good notice of that. So measure everything is kind of our mantra. Even if you think you're never going to need it, chuck it on a table and build some pretty reports over it. Really important to know what normal actually is. If you've got a problem on your site or in your application and something's going wrong and you jump on the box and CPU's at 75% and, oh, well, that must be a problem. Well, it might not be. It might always be at 75% at 3 o'clock and it's a completely unrelated issue. Unless you kind of know what's going on in your system, you've got no idea when something's going wrong. Again, looking at this stuff, it's all very well to store it, but you've really got to keep a good eye on it. You've got to know how you're growing, how fast you're growing, and that means keeping stuff and comparing it week on week, day on day, and year on year. All of the kind of normal stuff that you would think, CPU, memory, IOPS, but even some of the things that you don't think about, power in your data center, for instance, server rack space. Hey, we just bought 8 new servers. Where are we going to put them? You kind of need to think about that stuff if you're hosting your own kit. And automate everything. I'd be amazed how many DBAs we interview And you say, hey, talk me through your kind of normal day at work. And the first thing that they say is, oh, well, I come in and I go into job history and I look in to see if any jobs have failed. And you don't need to do that. If jobs are running by themselves, you don't need to know about them. You only need to know if there's a problem. So build yourself tools that let you know when things are going wrong. You can spend lots of money on big flash solutions, big enterprise level solutions, but there's heaps of stuff that you can do out of the box that just helps you in so many ways. So SQL agent jobs we use extensively across the site, and there's a bunch of stuff that you get with SQL to let you monitor what's going on with those from when they fail, and they can alert you in all kinds of ways. With the advent of 2005, which has obviously came back a few years now, we get so much cool stuff in DMVs now. There's so much information that's just at your fingertips that you really had to dig for in the past. And then probably the most important tool that we use is event logs. Everything gets logged to the event log. Any error, any issue, all of that gets forwarded off to a central database server, well, a couple of central database servers, and then we have a set of rules that either email or page, depending on kind of what the issue is. It costs us virtually nothing, and it's an incredibly powerful system to let us know when we're having problems. And lastly, just keep it forever. Disk is cheap. One of the systems we have that you can see kind of in the middle there, we've got an automated system that runs a trace on all of our production database servers every day for 10 minutes at the same time. We implemented that in 2006. We've got all of that data going back to 2006, so I can look at any stored procedure, anything that I want, and I can see what that's been doing over the last 5 years. I can see how many reads it's been doing, I can see how many times it's been called, and it's really, really easy to see when things go wrong. And you can see Dave's done some report server magic with some nice little sparkliny things. It's pretty cool.
Cool, so we have some pretty pictures, but regardless of the number of things you measure and monitor and the number of pretty pictures you have, there's unfortunately times when things go wrong. So, when systems go down, regardless of your system, if you've got a system that has four ladies sitting in the corner of the office, or if you have a system that's got millions of users, the users are the ones that notice. Unfortunately for us, the users are pretty much all of New Zealand. So, when the site goes down, there's that added level of excitement, let's call it. So, just to make sure that you don't think the site's always down. This is from two distinct events, not four. One in 2009, one 2010. Both completely, well, both mostly not related to the database, I'd like to say. we'll just leave it there.
So the kind of advent of social media has been a real double-edged sword for us, because Twitter is unforgiving. Stuff that we used to get away with, we'd deploy something and we'd maybe have the site broken for 5-10 minutes. We'd get away with. We don't now. I mean, this one, which is from March of 2010, the site was down for, well, parts of the site were down for about 15 minutes. Within 3 minutes, it was on the front page of Stuff as breaking news.
It's nice of them.
Yeah, it was nice of them.
Cool. So, everyone's got their little approaches or flow charts or nothing, and you just freak out. But there's always some sort of anatomy of an issue in every organization. So I'll just quickly run through basically what we do. So something will break, obviously. And all of our monitoring and alerting and bits and pieces will tell us that something's broken. I mean, if something breaks in your system and you find out from someone else, or from Twitter or your message boards, or user wanders over and says, hey, the system's down, then that kind of sucks. So you should definitely know before anyone else that your system's down. Otherwise, I think you've failed. You should go home. As you would have seen a few slides earlier, there was a nice picture of a very helpful chap kind of pointing up at four big monitors on the wall in the Trade Me office. And so we have these four big screens up on the wall for everyone to see that have basically graphs and charts and things showing the status of everything. So it's kind of out there in the open for everyone to see when something does go wrong. So it's an added incentive to fix stuff quickly. So yeah, we get to know that something's wrong. We get alerted, whether that's by emails, texts, in slightly less optimal circumstances via Twitter and message board. This particular one here on Twitter was just from last week when Telecom had a few issues. So luckily that wasn't us. I mean, we kind of saw about a third of our network traffic drop off, and CPU on all of our main core databases kind of just dropped by about a third. And I sat there for a while going, I think something's not quite right. Either that or I'm awesome and I've just made everything run a lot better. And I kind of looked up at
Dave's always adding value like that. It's great.
That's me. I kind of looked up at the screens and literally saw a big sort of corresponding drop in the network graphs. So, that luckily turned out not to be us, and that was a Telecom issue with pretty much a lot of their customers just falling off TradeMe. So, that gave us a bit of a fright. We know about an issue, and then various people will start jumping to attention. There's basically a primary on-call person in each team, but all of us are pretty much fair game. So the on-call people will jump online, the troops will be rallied. We use a bunch of methods for this, so obviously the tried and trusted texts and phone calls and whatnot, emails. We use Link a lot, Microsoft Link, so we can do IM and TradeMe was probably the first company that I started at where MSN used to be a kind of required part of your toolkit rather than being banned. So that was interesting. We've now moved on to the slightly more robust enterprise level link. But it works really well. I was chatting to Moana the other day on having a little voice conference talking about an issue because I got tired of typing. So that works really well for us.
Yeah, just to add to that, so we only rolled that out a few months ago. So we were using OCS, and we've upgraded to this, and it's really really cool. I can't not just to plug it because I'm standing on stage at a Microsoft gig. The value in just having all your team right there at your fingertips and being able to hit that voice conference button and take your hands off the keyboard so you can actually write SQL or do whatever is pretty cool.
As long as we don't do video conference and have to look at each other in 1 in the morning. Moving swiftly along.
Awkward silence.
Yeah. So obviously because we're awesome, we fixed the issue quite quickly. So then I guess the next step is that we have to then communicate that out. So fix the issue, let management and I guess the users, which is pretty much most of you, know what's going on, and that could be via a bunch of channels. So we've got a pretty much dedicated social media guy now who takes care of our Twitter comms and Facebook and all that jazz, as well as our message boards internally. Matt's on there from time to time reassuring our message boarders that things are going to be okay and TradeMe will come back up at some point.
Sorry, I was just going to say, so all of this kind of comm stuff's really important internally as well. So it's kind of one of our core values about sort of being open and honest and what have you. But because we deploy so much, we break stuff, right? We're deploying twice a day, lots of changes happening. We're only human. We're going to break stuff. It's really how we react and deal with those breakages and those issues. And being honest and taking ownership and taking responsibility and making sure that we learn from those mistakes. So no one's going to get crucified at work for breaking stuff. I've broken so much stuff over the years you would not believe, and I'm still here. It's great, but it's just about learning from those mistakes and really just not making the same mistakes twice. We're very forgiving.
Yeah, of course. And the last step I'll just mention there, which is quite good because. It sounds really simple to me now, but a lot of the places I've worked before haven't done this sort of thing, which is just having a distribution group in Exchange, which we call Ops Event, which is just made up of all the tech people, all the on-call people, maybe a few business-type heads who have an interest in whether or not the site's up or down. And we'll flick out a bit of a debrief on what's gone on and what the issue was and how it's been resolved. And it gives us a really good central database. I mean, we've got an internal wiki, which we we use quite a lot. But to be honest, I probably use my email and the search in Outlook a lot more than any online system. Just because you can, you know, we'll paste little SQL snippets. This is how I fixed the issue, or this was, I had to add an index on this, or whatever the fix was. And that's just forever. You can go back and search through Outlook and figure out what went wrong the next time it happens.
Quick show of hands, how many people in their organizations are using Twitter for communication? Yeah, quite. And is that, again, kind of show of hands, is there a kind of designated corporate account that one person uses, or can you tweet on a designated corporate account? And what about, is there any companies where, you know, you can tweet individually but sort of represent your company as well? A couple of hands?
Yeah.
Interesting.
Cool, so that's all the intense stuff. Now we'll move on to some, it was pretty intense, wasn't it? It was for me.
I'm sweating. So this is a list of the top 20 most viewed auctions of all time. So there's some weird stuff on here, so be warned. But nothing still touches the Tana Umanga handbag palaver of June 2006. So this this was pretty epic, right? It really captured the nation at the time. And again, I hadn't been at Trade Me all that long, and I can remember the Friday night in the office. So back in those days, it was a little bit less formal than it is now, and our Friday drinks started pretty early. So by the time this appeared on the news at 6 o'clock, most of the tech guys had a few beers. And what was happening was I think it was TV3 News from memory, were actually updating the price of the auction, the leading bid, at the end of every ad break. So literally the site would go down on these kind of cycles when the ad break would come on. And the reason that it was going down was not because of the volume of traffic on the site. It was because one of our admin screens that the customer service people were in couldn't cope with the number of bids and questions on the site. So the admin guys were all in there. They were removing bogus bids and they were removing dodgy questions and doing all that stuff. But every time they went into that screen, they'd screw the site, basically. So there were a bunch of database guys running around hacking procs on live and doing all kinds of stuff while people refreshed their beers. It was fun times. But yeah, nothing to this day, nothing's touched it. Still over a million views. Number four on that list is the Rocky the Rock. I don't know if anyone remembers that from the Christchurch earthquake. So the big boulder that was in the middle of someone's hall, that got pretty big pretty quick. My personal favourite was the Optus B1 satellite from April 2006 as well. Now, was Sky down for like a month or something because the satellite was screwed? I think, and someone decided to be a bit. Was it 2 days?
A month.
Two days a month. It's all fine.
We round things up.
Give that man a prize. No, seriously, you should get a prize. Simon will sort you out. Yeah, so lots of kind of interesting stuff, and it's really only limited to people's imagination. And we still get these all day, every day. We even have a special page now called Auctions. I'm not sure which one of the two Rugby World Cups that is that's in that top left photo. I'm assuming it's the replica, don't know.
It's the other real one.
It's a genuine replica cake.
One of the things that is really interesting for us internally, and we're also incredibly lucky, is how well we can sort of take the temperature of the nation and see what people are doing. So we're incredibly lucky in that while we're a really, really big site, upwards of 95% of our traffic is domestic. So you can only be a member of Trade Me if you're in New Zealand or Australia. Our traffic, you can set your clock to it. It looks like this every single day. So you can see kind of our quietest time here in the wee hours of the morning, which is, you know, when if Dave wants to break something, that's when he's going to do it. We ramp up as people start waking up in the morning, and then big jump at lunchtime. People jump on their computers at lunch and do stuff. We also see quite a big rise from about 4:30 in the afternoon. In my mind, that's, I can't be asked doing any more work today. I'm just going to jump on Trade Me for the rest of the day. I have no scientific evidence to back that up, but I'm pretty sure that that's what it is. 6 o'clock news is a big one. It's still one of the bigger TV events that we see. And then we normally see a pretty big dip at 8:30 when the sort of big prime time shows come on. The biggest one of those was for about the last few months. There was something like CSI.
Just like a perfect storm.
Like perfect storm of three like really big TV shows on at 8:30, and there was a massive drop. But
it's the first drop I've had when I've gone into work, and I've had an email from like the head of tech going, hey, there's a dip, is there some sort of technical issue, and I'd have to go onto TVNZ to figure out what the issue was. And you kind of, oh yeah, there's CSI and there's something else. Oh yeah, no, it's 8:30 TV, cool, sweet. It's easy fix, so.
Yeah, and again, it's just about understanding what your system's doing. So going back to that telecom outage from last week, half of our traffic dropped. We needed to prove that it wasn't our problem. It wasn't, but you need to kind of look at this stuff. This was the finale of Outrageous Fortune. So that's our normal traffic in the kind of orangey colour there, and that's the night that the finale of Outrageous Fortune was on. So again, we had a similar conversation when everyone got into work, and it's like, holy shit, what the hell happened? Those Wests. So endearing. And this was the February earthquake in Christchurch. So this is our page impressions per hour. So the earthquake happened, somewhere around 1 o'clock? Obviously you can see as soon as it happened, everyone was much more interested in finding out what was going on, hitting news websites and all that kind of thing. So it's really important that we understand what's happening outside of our own environment. Weather's a massive contributor to us as well. This was really interesting. So last week, there's been the big cold snap across the country. I understand you guys got a few sprinkles up here in Auckland for the Aucklanders. What was it called? Graupel or something? I don't know. So normally bad weather is awesome for us. When it's raining, when the weather's crap, everyone jumps on their computers and jumps on TradeMe. It's fantastic. Last week is the first time we ever saw the almost the opposite of that, because the weather was so bad that people wanted to find out more about the weather than they did go on TradeMe. So you can see Met Service was a particular... So we're that kind of pink line where we've actually trended down. The news websites and Met Service have just kind of gone through the roof because so much exciting stuff was happening. As an aside, David has frostbite.
Superficial
frostbite. So I shit you not. He rides a motorbike to work, and he lives in Wainui Mata. For those of you who know Wellington, you have to go over a big hill. And on that really, really bad day, he rode his motorbike home. And I've seen a photo, and he literally is covered. He's got this much snow over him from head to toe. And his legs, from where they were up against the fuel tank of the bike, the snow had settled. And he's seriously got frostbite.
Yeah, cheers.
Crazy.
Sorry? Yeah, probably. I had the one leg down. I was kind of doing a sort of skating impersonation. So it was fine on the left leg. Just the right leg got nailed. It was the most exciting thing the after-hours doctors had ever seen. They were like calling their colleagues in. It was great. It's not... felt like a bit of a freak show. No, that was the next day. I'm South African, but I'm not that stupid. So... I didn't know you weren't meant to do that. I've never been in falling snow. I come from the south coast in South Africa, and it's 32 degrees usually. That white stuff started falling out the sky, and I thought it's okay. I ride home in the rain. Live and learn. Won't do that again. Cool. So moving on to some of the stuff that interests me quite a lot is the search stuff. So as you would have seen, we have obviously a massive audience. And the search data that we get out of that, we collect a lot of data every day. It's gigs and gigs and millions of rows a day. And from that, we can look at some really interesting stuff. So there's some numbers there that I won't go through, but there's a lot of searches done a day. The top 10 searches are up there, and you can just about set your clock to those. As much as I probably shouldn't say it, iPhone is the number one search 99% of the time.
Can't believe you said it.
I did. Windows Phone 7 was just too long. So the only times I've ever seen iPhone bump from that top spot was just after the earthquake, when the Rocky listing was on. So Rocky became the top search term for a couple of days. And just the other day, the Maori number plate, so Maori became the top search term for a little under a week. But other than that, it's pretty much iPhone, Corin Walker. There's obviously a lot of people looking for some clothes. I don't understand that. Pig dogs, that's always there. If you can shed some light on that, I'd love to talk to you afterwards. It's, there's either a lot of people looking for pig dogs or one really determined guy. Just refreshing the page a lot. And yeah, so it's pretty interesting. You can kind of tell some interesting things. So, you know, just preparing for this, I kind of thought, well, you know, I don't know if you saw in the previous slide there was firewood. So obviously, this is getting stuff just after this massive frostbite-inducing polar blast that we had. So firewood was up there at number three. So I thought, well, there must be some sort of terms that only show up during the summer or winter. So I did a little cool stuff with some, you know, except joins and, you know, some intersects and some cool stuff which I don't usually play with, and came up with these lists. So it makes for pretty interesting reading. I mean, this is not edited at all. This is not made any nicer. You know, you've got your Harley Davidsons in there in summer and sunglasses and chili bins. It's all the stuff you'd expect. You still got dog. You know, dog's just really popular. And then in winter, you've got all the stuff you'd expect as well. Wedding dress, I'm not too sure. I don't know if you get married in winter, or I don't know. So maybe you buy it in winter and you wear it in summer.
So the moving overseas one's interesting, right?
People just get fed up. They say,
yeah.
Fuck this. It's too cold.
If I type it into Trade Me, it will happen.
It's the people looking for the stuff that the people moving are selling. I had some really awesome transition that I was going to do there, and I just completely missed that, so apologies, mostly to Matt. But we could see some interesting behavior as far as ticketing and events of sort of national significance. So Foo Fighters was announced, the concert at the end of the year, and pretty much the same day, you just see a massive spike in the number of searches. Obviously, people trying their luck, seeing if they can either buy memorabilia or tickets and things like that.
So show of hands, Foo Fighters fans in the audience, just out of interest. Keep your hands up. Keep your hands up. Definitely deserve a prize for being brave enough to admit that. That's awesome.
Yeah, so we see some pretty interesting stuff. You know, you've got your... This stuff was all easy because it's covered by the news, so I could get some nice consistent screenshots. You know, it's you got your Billy T and your Hobbit, so that made for.
So sorry, I was just going to say I saw on Trade Me today. There's on Trade Me Jobs, they're advertising for extras for the Hobbit. If any of you are based in Wellington, they're looking for large men with beards and character faces, which I think is another way of saying they're looking for kind of overweight, ugly guys. needless to say, I'm signing up. I think it'd be awesome.
Also, does anyone know? So this is this graph. It doesn't help that I'm moving the mouse because you can't actually see it. But this graph over here is 2 months. So about a week ago, we got that massive spike, and it's a massive spike. I've taken the numbers off, but it's huge. I couldn't find any news stories to tie up with that, and I kind of got a few of the team onto it because it's, you know, pretty important. Any idea what happened about a week ago that has to do with The Hobbit? Yeah, no, that was like a week or two before. It didn't line up nicely. I couldn't find anything, so that's... Sorry? Okay. Right. Because it's just a nice, you know, there's like a cliff. So, I don't know. But, yeah, you can... Yep. We're going technical again. The TMTB...
So come and get a prize at the end as well, by the way.
Yeah. So the TMTB is our search case cache because we... we can move load around. So we can literally say, I want all antique coin searches to go or browse to go to a specific listing server or search browse server. The way we cache the search terms is also done on a hash. So if you search for, I won't say iPhone, if you search for Windows Phone 7, then it'll get hashed by the application layer, and your search term will always go to the same set of search servers. So there will be one in Auckland, one in Wellington that are paired together, and that's just to ensure that cache is always hot for those search terms on those servers.
Yeah, absolutely. So Lucene is something that's come up a number of times over the years. We've had a couple of cracks at re-architecting search, and it's something that we constantly work at. The big thing, jumping back a whole bunch of slides, Dave was talking about the product SuperSpeed RAM Disk, which is a piece of software that takes a chunk of your server's memory and presents it as a volume, effectively. It's incredibly fast. It's faster than any solid state disk out there because it's DRAM, right? It's just coming straight off the motherboard. So we put TempDB on that because it's really volatile. If we lose the server, that whatever's in there disappears. So that's why we put TempDB on there, because obviously if a real database disappears, bad stuff happens, but TempDB gets recreated on restart, so that's fine. And that's why that cache stuff lives in there, because it's so blazingly fast. I don't know if that answers your question, but
Just to expand on that a little bit, so the full text also, I guess because our expertise lies in SQL rather than other stuff, the capability to do, for example, like the Boolean operators, attribute type searches, all that stuff is pretty easy for us to do with full text. So we can, we've built functions and things which will take a search term, strip it down, change all your Boolean operators into the correct full text operators and all that sort of stuff. But as Matt said, we're always looking at, you know, I'm currently looking at moving all that stuff into CLR functions and procs or potentially even up into the app. So yeah, we're not kind of wed to doing it one way, but we do, not everything we do is necessarily bleeding edge for a reason. Like we'll do it a certain way because it works. And only once we can kind of prove that we're going to get benefit out of changing it to the latest and greatest, then we'll kind of make that jump. But yeah, it's definitely something that we constantly look at, and it's more recently it's probably just been one of those things where we've left it alone because of lack of resource to spend on it. So I think, does that answer your question? More or less. Otherwise, hit me up afterwards.
We'll be where the free beer is.
Yep. So, with all the search data, the point of having data, I guess, you know, for any BI person will tell you, it's kind of you're making decision support, I guess, is the other kind of buzzword or buzzwords. If you need to decide, you know, should we buy more of this stock or sell this at a higher price or whatever, data is there to support you in decision making. So I thought I'd add a few slides to help you decide, you know, to end some age-old arguments. So I didn't do a very good job because I didn't really come out with any formula at the end that kind of declared a winner. So you can kind of make up your own minds, I guess. In one way, I guess, there's more forwards. In another way, maybe Holdens are worth more. I don't know. I don't want to get stoned at the end of this. So I don't really have a strong opinion either way. But and obviously we've got the Xbox in there as well. So anyone want to put their hands up as Justin Bieber fans, Metallica fans? So I'm happy to say that I think there was a clear winner with the Metallica on that side there. There's more sold and a higher price, so it's obviously worth more. I hope there's no sort of teeny boppers waiting outside to stone me. So it's just the kind of interesting thing that you can, as Matt said earlier, you can kind of take the pulse of New Zealand and you can look at, you know, what are people interested in, both from a, hey, I'm looking for this stuff, I'm selling more of this stuff. the potential for what we could do with the data set is huge, and that's kind of why we're looking to do a lot more with it. We're looking at aggressively expanding our kind of BI capabilities, and again, just to plug it, you know, one more time, because we haven't done it enough, is if you, you know, if that's your thing, you should come and talk to us and send us your CV. So yeah, thanks. I hope not too many people have fallen asleep. I can't see any.
So please do ask
questions.
Yeah, and I'm just going to make a liar out of Dave. So we're hiring. See?
Sorry, a whole bunch of stuff.
Go nuts.
So,
great question.
Yeah. So how do we generate the loads?
So Simon's going to address that.
Right, okay, there we go. So the question was, how do we...
But if you're not going to go tomorrow, you should come and talk to us afterwards.
Yeah. How do we generate load for testing our applications, I guess, was the question. And the answer was, you should come tomorrow. I have a feeling you're going to have to come to...
Yeah, so Simon's going to talk about the whole deploy process. We have a bunch of tools. It's all automated. It's all very robust, reliable, and repeatable. And it's really, really easy with all of our all of the tools that we've built over the years to track down when something bad happens, what the change that we made to cause that was. But, yeah, Simon, you've got an audience dying to know. Yeah, so we've had to do it three times in anger, so three times when really, really bad stuff has happened.
So I'll just, the question was, have we had to switch to the DR site in anger?
That was very good.
Yeah.
So three times in anger. Once in 2007 was probably the worst one. That was when we'd only just built our DR site. We'd never tested it. The site was down from about 10 o'clock on a Monday night till about 6 o'clock on a Tuesday morning. It's the worst night of my life. It was the week before my wedding as well, so it was pretty exciting. Outside of that, we switch our core between data centres three or four times a year just to make sure that we can. So at the moment, core is in Auckland. We're about to move data centres in Wellington, so we'll take all load out of Wellington for a day, move our racks into our new data centre and then distribute the load back, and then once we've got that bedded in, we'll be due to move across again. But to be fair, we probably won't do that with all of the stuff that's happening with World Cup and all that. Probably won't happen until after Christmas. We have to take an outage to move it. So at the moment, it takes us, best case, an hour, but more like an hour and a half. So we do that when we do our scheduled ones three or four times a year, we do them the early hours of a Saturday morning. And that gives us, Saturday's our quietest day, so it gives us all of Saturday to make sure that we're happy with everything, and then we go into bang, Sunday's our biggest night of the week. And see Simon for a prize.
Yep. It's not entirely, no. It's kind of a mix of Microsoft log shipping and roll your own. We FTP the logs for performance reasons across the pipe between Wellington and Auckland. We use Quest Lightspeed for our backups, so all the logs are compressed. So I guess the short answer is no. It's not just Microsoft log shipping. So we have a bunch of stuff. Again, we've got lots of internal tools that we've written over the years. We've got lots of procs and things that will look at the LSNs of the logs and restore header onlys and take the LSNs and work out, okay, you want to restore a diff, so you need all the logs, or you want to restore a full, you don't need anything, we'll just restore the full. It's all that sort of fun stuff. It's something that's kind of just grown over the years, I guess, but... We're moving towards using SAN kind of a storage level replication. So in the pretty near future, hopefully. So that would probably do away with our log shipping entirely. And then we'd hopefully be able to fail over pretty seamlessly between the two sites as well and keep replication and everything going. The hour and a half or so that Matt was talking about doing a DR is primarily taken up with replication related stuff. So with a transactional replication, we obviously have to do the snapshots, which is, you know, just the one TradeMe database is about 750 gigs, and there's about four of them or so. So, it doesn't take a few seconds. It takes a while to snapshot them. It takes even longer to push that stuff across the WAN, especially if you're pushing to the list or the search servers on the other side of the WAN pipe. So, yeah, that's probably where most of the time is taken.
Yes.
So how do we stop the site from being hacked? That's not a database question, so I'll give that to Matt.
So we do a bunch of stuff is the answer to that. We play some of that pretty close to our chest. Obviously going into too much detail makes it a bit easier for people to try and find ways around it. Happy to come and for you to come and have a chat to me afterwards, and I can talk you through some of it in a little bit more detail. I think we're almost out of time. If take a couple more, sir.
I currently spy the various categories on TradeMe. Are you actually going to open up your data in terms of APIs?
What a great question. You should come to sign. So we have an API that we released about a year ago, right? So there's some new and exciting developments that Simon's going to talk about tomorrow. But at the moment, there's lots of the stuff that you're currently, if you're just talking about listing data that you're scraping from categories, you can get that out of the API at the moment.
Yeah.
You just have to register for a developer account and have at it. So developer.trademe.co.nz, rock along. There's good documentation. There's a forum there. The guys are really active in helping out people. We really want Kiwis to come up with cool ways to use TradeMe data. So it's an area that, yeah, as I say, Simon will be talking about in a bit more detail tomorrow. And you should grab a prize off them as well. Anything else before we wrap up? So, sure. So the question was, what's Memcached and why do we use it? So it's a distributed cache effectively that sits across all of our web servers. So the original version is a Linux version. We run the .NET port, but basically it's an in-memory data store, hashed across however many servers you like. So all of our, there's so much of our data that's, we don't need to refresh very often. So we store lots of category information in there. We store lots of watch list information in there. So when you're cruising around the site, we actually carry your watch list with you in Memcached. So when you have a page of listings, there's a little tick box there that says whether it's on your watch list or not, or you can add it. Rather than having to query the database every single time you go to a new page to find out what's on your watch list, we just do that once and then kind of carry it around with you. It's incredibly powerful. It's free. It's awesome. And grab a prize.
Cool. So I think we're probably going to get chased out
in a
second.
So
we'll stick around. We've all got the TradeMe shirts, so thank you.